Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
First of all, our newspaper panel, because we have a fair bit to get through. We have Louisa Meehan, who is from Woodview HRM, and Declan Ralph of BW Foods. Both very welcome.
Good morning.
Sorry about the conditions outside through our window. It feels like January, which is a bit strange. As I said in the introduction, a fair bit of stuff going on, and not all of it business, but more sort of social and economic.
Yeah.
Healthcare looming large, and I think there's really... We always say this when there's a big predominant story, there's only one place to start, but there is only one place to start, which is the Rotunda Hospital across the front page of virtually all the papers. And Louisa, this is a story that has a lot of different elements to it. Women's healthcare right front and centre, obviously the whole issue of private versus public, slaunch of care reforms, and of course a clash between a hospital and a minister. So there's a lot going on here. But the main drift of the coverage is that we're in a Mexican standoff between the hospital and the minister, both very much asserting their cases either through spokespeople or sources and so on. Mm-hmm. There's lots of letters and legal advice floating around. So what's your reaction to the coverage this morning and the issue more generally?
So I've actually got very strong opinions on this. The Rotunda is the hospital, I suppose, being named because it's one of the largest maternity hospitals in the country. But as you read through the story, it's clear that this is actually the maternity hospital. So the obstetricians throughout the country are advocating that we can continue to have private healthcare for women who are going through maternity care. About 25% of women who go through maternity care opt for private healthcare. That's one in four. It's a huge number. What the minister is saying that we need to abolish that and there needs to be just public healthcare for private patients. Now, for me personally, I know I'm quite privileged. I was able to have private healthcare for both of my pregnancies and I didn't do it, you know, out of any, it was a difficult choice in some ways financially, but for me, it was really, really important that I could choose who was in the room. I did not feel comfortable having a male doctor in the room. Not that they're not phenomenal, they are, and I've lots of friends who've used them, but I felt really vulnerable and I felt unsafe and I was utterly terrified. And I know with my first pregnancy, had I not been private, the registrar that was on duty in the middle of the night when I went in was going to send me back to the ward, and it was the consultant that was called because I was a private patient who made a decision in relation to my healthcare, and that is the only reason that my son is alive today.
So you're using the word choice there, and you're putting your personal story onto that, you know, making it real in what you're saying.
Like, there's another story in here about a lady who's currently pregnant, Sinead Murphy Collins, who's 34, travelling from Mullingar to Dublin to have private antenatal care because her pregnancy is high risk. And not everybody can afford to have private healthcare. Everybody who's in a high risk pregnancy or in any pregnancy deserves the very best possible medical care. But every woman who has the ability to have choice should be able to choose the best possible care to make her feel safe. And if that means that you choose a particular consultant who you have a connection with to support you in what is one of the most incredibly magical and traumatic experiences that most women go through, then they should have that choice and it shouldn't be removed from them.
And do you think it's like the optics of this, just taking it on that level, the idea that we're going to solve this issue of public and private and we're going to decide that the test case for it is going to be, you know, a pregnancy care, it's not a good look. You know,
it's not a good look. We're basically saying, yeah, let's attack women's health. Let's take away a right from women to have private healthcare in a situation where they need it. If this is going to be the policy, then the government needs to come out and there needs to be absolutely no private patient in any public hospital for any treatment at any time in the country. And that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is that we're not going to have private healthcare for women who are going through maternity care.
Declan, what's your take on it? I mean, there's certainly issues here. A lot of men making decisions for women is a kind of a problem, a patriarchal kind of element to this story. But then there is a woman minister equally. So it's a kind of a complicated one from that point of view. But the new element I'm noticing in this is that the health insurers are saying they won't pay for a lot of these consultancies. So it's getting very knotty, this whole thing, isn't it?
It is getting very complicated, yeah. The health insurers, the main ones in there, are saying that they're probably not going to pay the bills if you use the consultant that's on the public-only contract. If you use them and they give you private care and you claim it back from your health insurer, that they're unlikely to pay you. I think as well, Emmett, the Minister McNeill as well has said, I mean, you know, she makes a point where she wants the consultants who have been trained by the state, in the state, who are being paid for by the state to work for all women in the Irish state who have risky pregnancies or, you know, just normal pregnancies, if that's the correct way to say it, Louisa, and not just because a woman has the opportunity to go private and can do that. So she's making the sort of counter argument that, you know, this should be available to everybody. I think as well, the scale of this is actually quite small. If you look at some of the detail here, it says between January and March of this year, there was just one consultant on a Sláinte Care contract at the Rotunda offering private care, and that consultant delivered just two babies, which is 0.5% of the 373 babies successfully delivered, I presume, and all healthy under private care at the hospital in that time. So it's a small amount of babies. It's one consultant, they're saying, but the principle here that the Rotunda seem to be fighting for is that private health care for pregnant women is continued into the future.
But what comes across to me is a kind of a typical Irish story here, which is we see these headlines about Sláinte Care and we're going to have universal health care, and everyone sort of goes, oh, that's happening, and everyone moves on. But it wasn't happening, clearly. And, you know, it wasn't cleaned up. Whatever, leave the rights and wrongs of who's doing what or whatever, but it was kind of presented as we're moving towards this new system, we're having one tier in our health system, and everyone kind of moved on in terms of coverage and analysis and so on. But when you actually go through what's happened, there's all sorts of emails and letters flying between the two sides. So it wasn't fixed at that time.
Well, it's sort of, again, as you say, typically Irish. There was a deadline. It was all supposed to be done by this time. And sure, it's only a deadline. Sure, we'll keep doing what we're doing. And we have a principle here that we want to fight for. So we're going to sort of ignore the deadline and keep moving along with what we're doing.
Yeah, and it seems to be Louisa.
Well, what I would say to just add to that is the healthcare providers are the people who understand best the level of care and support that a woman needs in a maternity situation or anybody needs in any other medical situation. The obstetricians, the hospitals, are almost all coming out and saying that we need to maintain the option for private healthcare for women in these situations. So are we going to turn around and have politicians who are not medically trained say that the medical profession are incorrect in terms of the care and support that these women need? And it isn't, you know, there's a little bit in here about pitting the consultants against the midwives. And I think that that's unfair because every woman who goes through a maternity hospital will have the support of midwives. Midwives are absolutely incredible. They're a phenomenal support. And for some women, a midwife will handle the entire pregnancy and the majority of the delivery and do a phenomenal job. But that's not the right care for every woman in every situation. And in my experience, the midwives and the consultants work incredibly well together and they support each other. And, you know, I think pitting one against the other is not the way to go.
I think as well, Emma, just on this as well, I mean, these public only contracts, their salaries are up to €340,000 per annum. So should they not be giving the same care to a public patient as they would to a private patient? You know, I mean, you know, should they not be on call? Should they not be available to public patients as much as they would be to private patients? Is that not an argument as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, lifting the standards across the board, I suppose, is what you're saying. What I do know, because I've had many years of looking at these things, is this has all the hallmarks of a big summer story that will run weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months. And I suppose the minister doesn't want to be seen or perceived as the minister who lost Sláinte Care on her watch. I presume that's what's motivating her position. But as Louisa has said, it's much bigger.
And actually, you know what? I didn't want to lose my baby and I didn't want to lose my health. And that would have happened in two different situations, one in relation to my baby, one in relation to me personally. In it with a post-pregnancy complication, where having a consultant, having somebody who knew my case, who I could reach out to, improved my health outcome immeasurably.
Yeah, so when this word choice is used, you're saying there's a lot more going on than the word would indicate to. Now, let me move on to a story that might seem a million miles away, but it's kind of tenuously connected because it's about the state's ability to deliver things and deliver projects and design policy correctly, which is Irish Rail, who have written down the value of a signalling project by €50 million, which in anyone's world is big money. Now there's a possible issue with a signalling system in Cork. So Declan, I mean, from children's hospitals to this story, we keep getting it wrong when it comes to big infrastructural projects.
We certainly do. And this seems to have been going on for about 12 years, Emmett, at this stage, from the genesis of this project. But we have got it really wrong. As you said, 50 million. In fact, the Irish Rail had to take an impairment on their financial accounts of that 50 million recently as well. it's one of those stories. There's an awful lot of figures in it, an awful lot of detail in it. And when you start looking at it...
This is Martin Wall, Irish Times. Yeah,
Martin Wall in the Irish Times. So the 50 million write-down, initially they thought that this would cost about 188 million, was what the original estimate was, but that just seems to be going up and up and up. Also, the company that's involved here, Indra, who are the software company, are at the root of the cause of the delays because their software is just not working. They're not delivering it on time. They're blaming everything from COVID to remote working.
We had a similar-ish type of project in the Arts Council about a year and a half ago. Louisa, what is it about IT projects? They just seem to be perennially problematic and overrunning on budget.
They're really difficult to plan. They're really difficult to put in place in a way that makes sense. And, you know, as we've said, this is going on for 12 years. What we needed from an IT perspective 12 years ago, what we would have planned for, budgeted for, what we need today are probably vastly different. It's not clear to me in reading the story if any part of this IT system has been functional. It seems like it possibly hasn't. And it seems like there's a control room that's going on that's linked to the guards and links to the rail, but that this was initially intended to be for the Dublin Rosslare line and then, you know, sort of spread out throughout the country. What I would say in relation to IT projects is when they're going wrong, sometimes even if there is a significant loss, the cheapest thing to do can be to call it, make a decision and say, this isn't working. It's not going to work. We're going to stop sending good money after bad. And let's take a step back and actually say, what do we need to do and how do we do a better job at this? Because just giving more and more money to this Spanish IT provider who hasn't been delivering, you know, their off-the-shelf product doesn't seem to be providing what we need. That's not going to fix the problem.
I know. I mean, I agree with you. And you get to that moment where you go, do we stick or twist with this provider vendor? You know, yeah. You have to decide.
You would also think, Emmett, that, you know, in a significant infrastructural project like that, that there would be penalties built into it. I mean, you know, that would be standard business practice. Why aren't the state doing that?
You don't see much recouping. You know, you don't see vendors being pursued. Yeah. Maybe they won't sign the contract or they won't tender if that's the conditions because it's a tight market in some areas.
Maybe we changed with the requirements. Maybe we said we want X and we got X. We're like, oh, well, maybe we want X plus Y plus Z. And they're going, well, we can do that, but it may or may not work. Like, we don't actually see the detail of
that. No, you'd have to get into the... And what was the original procure? You'd have to do a lot of digging to get to the bottom of it. Louisa, can I move you on to the world of pay?
Yes.
IBEC, not happy, you know, and that's their job, is to be not happy about certain things over time. But this is about the whole issue of pay and how we find out, like, this is new rules coming in via the EU, but we're adding a bit on, apparently, and we're sort of putting an Irish spin on this. And what they're looking for here is you cannot ask employees what they were paid in their previous post or job applicants, which, you know, a lot of us listening in would be some people happy about that, other people less so, depending on your situation. And then also more, you know, rules about revealing pay so we can see the gender pay gap between different categories of workers doing the same job. Employers, you probably won't be surprised, aren't happy with all of this. Meanwhile, again, the minister in this case is Norma Foley saying these are good progressive ideas. So where do you sit?
So look, the crux of the issue here is that this is about the EU pay transparency directive. We've known about this for the last couple of years. It was supposed to be coming into effect from tomorrow, from the 7th of June. It isn't going to come into effect. The primary issue for employers, and particularly for the SME sector, as IBEC is saying, is the lack of clarity in terms of timeframe. So the government haven't given us clear guidelines. They haven't given us a clear timeframe. As HR professionals, we have a really good idea in relation to what's coming in. And as you said, one of the things will be in recruitment that you can't ask somebody what their salary was. You probably can still ask them what their salary expectation is into the future. You need to be more clear.
And the reason this is a bugbear, a lot of employees feel that they can never advance. If they're on a low paid role, they're always going to be stuck. And whereas if they cannot get that's right or wrong. What people I talk to say, you know, I'm only on X and I know I can never get out of this band because the employer will use that as the baseline.
So yes, you're right to a large extent, but it's actually based in equal pay for gender reasons, in that historically women enter at a lower pay rate. And so if a woman is applying for a job and a man is applying for a job, on average, it is likely that the man is on a higher salary going into applying for the job than the woman. And so therefore, if you base the new salary for the new job on your current salary, then you're just sort of, you know,
perpetuating
the problem.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say this job is worth 50,000.
Yeah, as you say, you can still talk about future expectations.
Future, exactly. Right? And then whoever gets the job gets the 50,000, irrespective of whether they were on 30 or 40 beforehand.
Right. Well, we have a serious high roller here beside us on the left hand side, Declan. I mean, money is even irrelevant at this point. So what do you think of what's happening here?
I think it's great. I think what the government need to do, you mentioned it, indicated in your intro there, that this gold plating, let's just stick with what the EU want. I don't think we need to gold plate it. I think the EU have been slow here in developing their toolkit for employers as well. So that has had a knock-on effect here at us in Ireland here. But for me, it is one of those things that I think is very good and will be good for people in terms of career progression and in terms of self-development over time.
Declan, while I have you, I'm going to spend a brief moment on this because we're talking to Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times later in all of this. But mention of the economy, a big revision during the week, Declan, 12% drop in GDP here in Ireland. I know GDP is not telling us everything by sometimes telling us too much.
Yeah.
But do you worry a little bit about the fragility of the Irish economy as we head into the middle of the summer?
Not so much, no. I think the drop really is back to a Trump effect again.
I knew his name would come up. Well, you did all right. We're 22 minutes in
and the
T word has only appeared now.
In 24 and 25, a lot of the pharmaceutical and tech companies front-loaded their deliveries into the US out of Ireland. So, you know, we got a bump in those 2 years and now we're coming down in the current time frame. So it's not working. The modified domestic demand, which is the preferred metric, as you say, in terms of what's happening here locally, grew by 0.6% during the quarter. And domestic focused sectors of the economy also growing very, small, but 0.4, but still growing. So I think it's a good one. The downside of it is that in terms of the EU, it's kind of skewing the figures a bit. And
I'm sure they're delighted our figures are skewing their figures.
Yes, and they're a little bit out, but from a consumer point of view, it looks like they will put up the interest rates in the next quarter as well. So that's, you know, first time since 2023. So that's not good news for everybody either.
Yeah. So a mixed bag. That's what you're saying. There's one there and there for everybody to take something out of it. If we aren't talking about Trump and Louisa, we're talking about AI these days in 2026. You either have to be talking about one or the other, it would seem. So we have a number of AI stories kind of littering the newspapers in various angles. We have, I suppose, the interesting first part is regulation. So we have a big AI company, Anthropic, which is becoming more known because they've got a lot of very advanced systems. They're saying that they should halt the development of AI. It's so scary and dystopian that we need to sort of stop the whole thing. Is there a slight element, though, of sort of asking the fox to regulate the chicken house here? Like, these companies are going to say various things, but some outside force needs to kind of grasp this whole area, I would suggest.
I would completely agree with you, but it's a little bit like who is that outside force? Because if we don't have AI developing in the West, in America, in the Europe, is it going to come from China? And then we'll have no control over it. So this is a geopolitical issue as much as it is an AI issue. And we do need to pay attention to the likes of Anthropic. They know what they're talking about. And what they're saying here is that AI is moving so fast that if we don't slow it down, AI itself will start creating new AI and humans won't be involved in the process. So we won't have the level of control that we currently have as humans in terms of how AI systems are developed and evolved over time.
But they could slow down themselves.
They could.
So what I mean is they don't need anyone else to tell them to slow down.
No, but if they slow down and it's not something that's done across the board, then they're
out of
the race. What's the point?
Well, there is,
it needs to be a collective decision that we as humanity need to determine that we protect humanity over protecting AI. But that's a really big ask in a world that's in a lot of turmoil at the minute.
And Louisa, a very interesting accompanying story. Youngsters like to talk to ChatGPT about their problems, issues and stresses and strains. Although I see in the quote it said, when I come home, I put in my problems into ChatGPT. It doesn't ever make you think you're wrong and is biased towards making us feel good. That concerns me a little bit.
It's really concerning. I mean, look, you can if you know how to use AI very well, you can actually train it to be more challenging towards what you're putting into it. But for the average user and for the majority of people, when you use AI, it kind of reaffirms whatever it is that you're thinking and it tells you that you're right or it gives you sort of confirmation. So you get that confirmation bias. And when we have 1 in 4 youngsters preferring to talk to AI than to a real person, there's no wonder that we're also having a significant increase in mental health issues and loneliness and then consequences that come along those lines.
Maybe the surprise is that they're still talking to three real people. Is possible you could flip the story the other way. We're under pressure of time, so we're going to try and dispatch the next few very quickly. Declan, we have this Rathwood company based out of Carlow, big garden centre, furniture kind of related business. It seems to be good news emerging there that could be saved.
Yeah, it's had a very good reputation, Emmett, over the years. Set up in 1994 by the Kyos in Rath in County Carlow, as you said. Got into a lot of difficulty in the last couple of years. One of their main suppliers in China, as I understand it, went into liquidation. So there was a chain effect. They couldn't get supplies. Lots of people had paid deposits. The court heard from the examiner that 13,500 people almost were due refunds. Almost all of them have gotten. Still 2,500 haven't. So that's a concern. The examiner has confirmed that he has a potential investor. The investor's not named at this stage. The liabilities of the company now stand at 19 million, just over 19 million. Not surprisingly, the revenue commissioners are owed a chunk of that. And it is probably, hopefully, a good story that'll come. The creditors, unfortunately, will have to take a bit of a bath on it. But maybe.
Yeah, and considering the industry jobs, we're in gardening, you know, the summer months is the peak period for them. So hopefully they can pull all the.
And hopefully
together.
The jobs can be saved as well. Absolutely. There's over 70 jobs there. So,
Louisa, do you still use cash? We're hearing a story in the Irish Times, page 30, or the Independent, page 38, saying there's been a big decline in tenors, 20 euro notes. I know Donald Trump is putting himself on the front of a $250 bill in America. But cash, is it on the way out? This is all sort of moving towards that. These little fragments of stories seems to be pushing it that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, certainly we've seen a significant change in the way that cash is used. I'm the mum of two teenage boys, so yes, I still have some cash going on. That teenagers tend to.
I was about
like
to say,
it.
Why are you linking that to those two?
You know, why am I linking that? That's a good question. Maybe I should ask them later.
At least it's not credit cards yet.
Well, they do have Revolut cards too. But it's quite interesting in that it's the number of 20 euro and 10 euro notes that are declining. So 50s and 100s haven't really changed, the number of those that is being issued. It's the smaller notes that are in decline, but the number of coins that are out in use seems to be sort of stable as well. So it seems to be the squeezed middle of the cash world seems to be what's in decline, and I think that's quite interesting.
And
to
also
see.
The charges now for tapping your card and doing other things, especially if you go overseas, they're absolutely ruinous.
And actually, a lot.
So maybe it's forcing as they go up, it'll force people back to cash.
Force people, and a lot of small businesses prefer cash because it's more profitable for them. They're not losing.
Yeah, because all these payment companies are taking a hefty, fulsome commissions. Are you still a cash man, Declan?
Just saying to Louisa earlier,
I carry it around in wheelbarrows.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I used cash. I have no cash ever. And
well, you're getting hit for all these charges.
Yeah, I am.
Gold bullion that he's carrying around.
So convenient. So convenient.
Do you take gold here, my man? Is get the impression. One final story, which again will be a bit of a dominator as we come out of the summer in September. Katie Taylor announced, unveiled, etc. Barry Hearn, her promoter, very much to the fore of this bout that's going to be going on in Crow Park. Louisa, I know from before we started the show, you're not a boxing fan, but you might be persuaded this occasion.
Yeah, look, I'm not a boxing fan, and I am a Katie Taylor fan. I think what she has done for Wicklow, shout out to Wicklow, of course, is phenomenal. What she's done for Ireland, what she's done for women's sport, what she has done for the profile of boxing in Ireland is just phenomenal. And it's really interesting. I wouldn't have known this, to be honest, but the last time that Crow Park hosted a professional boxing match was Muhammad Ali in 1972. And for Katie Taylor to follow in his footsteps, go Ireland.
Okay. You'll be going too. Yeah.
Sounds of ole, ole, ole ringing out across Crow Park.
Absolutely. Seeing as we're not in the World Cup, we don't have much other sport to cheer right now.
Definitely.
Listen, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you. That is Declan Ralph and Louisa Meehan. Now this.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.